This is Jay Sekulow in Washington, D.C. My guest, constitutional law professor Peter Irons, his book, God on Trial, Dispatches from America's Religious Battlefield.
Live from Washington, D.C.
This is my right.
Jay Sekulow Live.
Right given by God.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now.
Live a free life.
Call 1-800-684-3110.
Live in freedom.
That's 1-800-684-3110.
Talking about freedom.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
I will fight.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast, everyone, and welcome to Washington, D.C. You know, from time to time on this broadcast, we've brought to you, we consider really major works, really important books that are out on these topics that we cover so often on this broadcast. One of those books is called God on Trial, Dispatches from America's Religious Battlefield. It's a very unique look, a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on in some of the major religious liberties cases, a couple of which I was involved in. Our guest in the studio with me here in Washington, we just finished up doing a event for C-SPAN that will be airing later in the month, is Peter Irons. He's formerly a professor of law at the University of California in San Diego. He's also a graduate of Harvard Law School, and we've been friends. He's written a lot of books in the past, and one of the best-known books, and Peter, I'm going to start before we get to God on Trial, let's mention this one, was you were the first one to really do work with the audio tapes at the Supreme Court releasing those, which, by the way, my students, we use all the time in the courses I teach on constitutional law advocacy.
Well, that was a fascinating experience, Jay. For one thing, it made available for the first time for the general public, really a seat inside the Supreme Court to hear the oral arguments in some very important cases, Roe versus Wade, Miranda versus Arizona, and a couple of dozen of these cases. And it also made me the only lawyer who's ever been threatened with a lawsuit by the Supreme Court. They were not pleased when the tapes were released. But as it turned out, the court, as I used to say, somebody read the First Amendment. And they have now made those tapes available for anybody who wants to listen to them. And in fact, you can get audio tapes or audio versions of arguments sometimes right after the cases are argued.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court has actually even, a couple of cases that I've been involved in, they actually had the audio running within the hour of when the case was argued, and sometimes almost simultaneously, and you'll see this, and you remember in the campaign finance case, they actually were showing the artist renderings while the audio was coming up. So that was very helpful. It was really a very unique thing you did, and I think it's helped tremendously because it's kind of removed the mystery of what was going behind the walls, the beautiful walls of that courtroom, and let people see inside what was going on.
Yeah, and I think the public really has it improves our understanding of this, as you said, very mysterious institution, and opens it up for the people. Of course, the next issue is going to be videotaping,
yeah,
televising.
They're fighting that like cats and dogs. They don't want that to happen.
No, they don't.
I don't know, though. I suspect in the next 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised if it does. Just the political pressure may be so great.
Well, you know, both Senator Leahy, who's now chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Senator Spector, who is the ranking member and was the chair, have both supported a bipartisan bill to allow the taping of Supreme Court arguments.
I think the American people would find it interesting. I think it would actually help understanding with regard to the entire issue of what goes on in the Supreme Court. Now, we're going to get into the book. We've got to take a break in about a minute, but before we get into the book in detail, I want to let people know the book is God on Trial. It is published by Viking Press. It is out in bookstores. I saw it just the other day. It's out in bookstores all over the country. Very interesting back cover of the book because you have the people that have said praise for God in trial. And here's what's interesting. The first one is Barry Lynn, my friend from Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and he knows we're friends. We don't agree on much, but we are good friends. Next is me, Jay Sekulow. Then you've got a little bit down the list. You got Nadine Strausen, who is the head of the American Civil Liberties Union. So a wide diversity, which I think actually is a testament to the book itself.
Well, in fact, it is, and I'm very grateful that people like you and Barry think highly of the book because it really tries to take a pretty objective look at these cases.
One of the things I want to talk about when we get back, folks, is in the book again, it's called God on Trial. It's available in bookstores everywhere. It's to get behind some of these major cases so you could see what was Peter's ideas when he was writing this great book. Again, the book is God on Trial. It's available in bookstores everywhere. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
The summer season is a time of celebration, with patriotic events taking place across the country, and the U.S. military often invited to take part. But there's one group working to intimidate the armed forces by questioning their involvement in certain celebrations. Americans United for Separation of Church and State tried to pressure the Air Force to cancel patriotic flybys at a Georgia celebration this past Memorial Day simply because Christian groups were involved in the event. And with the 4th of July approaching, it's likely Americans United will try this tactic again. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Sign on today to a letter going to top military leaders urging them not to be intimidated by pressure tactics of groups like Americans United. Add your name today. Take a stand for freedom. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. Or add your name online at aclj.org. When you choose Regent University, you're choosing to change your life. No one knows the value of an education from Regent more than Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. He received a PhD from Regent, focusing on the legal history of America.
The program academically is very rigorous, but at the same time, you get the opportunity to interact with some of the best thinkers in the country that are on the faculty at Regent University. It's really, I think, an unprecedented opportunity for students to really get into a discipline deeply.
Regent's graduate studies are just part of the story. Regent's undergraduate program is quickly expanding, with classes offered online and on campus. The environment at Regent is noticeably different than that of other universities.
At Regent, we reinforce the positives of your faith commitment. It's more of an enriching environment in that way, and I think that's one of the major distinctives of this university compared with any other.
Learn more about the college program at Regent by visiting regentundergrad.com, or you can call toll-free 1-800-374-4504. At Regent University, we believe in leadership to change the world.
This is my right, a right given by God.
Well, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. My guest is constitutional law professor and constitutional attorney Peter Irons. Brand new book is God on Trial, Dispatches from America's Religious Battlefields. It has everything in it, from the Mount Soledad War Memorial case that we talk so much about on this broadcast, to another case that many of you will remember. Now, we've added a lot of stations since the days of the Santa Fe case. That was the prayer at the football game, but there's a great discussion about that in here. Profiles on some of the lawyers, including me and Barry Lynn and a number of the others as well. It's a great book. Let me first ask you this, Peter. When I read the book, I said it's a must-read, and I said it was a must-read because it's the first book of its kind. There's a lot of books dealing with God and the gavel and God in America and God versus – I mean, they got all these books about religion in the courts. But this was the first one that went – away from the strict rulings of what the court held, that made more like a law review article than a book, and more to get behind the scenes. What were you, in putting this book together, what were you trying to accomplish?
Well, the main thing, Jay, is that, and I've done this in earlier books, starting 20 years ago, a book called The Courage of Their Convictions, 16 Americans Who Fought Their Way to the Supreme Court. And I'd always been more interested in people than in legal doctrine. And I decided for this book to visit communities around the country, communities, some of them very, very small, Whitley City, Kentucky, 1,000 people, all the way up to San Diego, which is over 1 million, in which there have been recent cases involving religious symbols on public property or religious practices in public schools, and talk to the people in the community who are involved in these cases.
On both sides.
On both sides. And find out what kind of people they were, what motivated them, what their backgrounds were, how they got involved in these cases, how it affected them, their families, and their communities. And I think it provides a perspective, as you said, most books about law are written by law professors. And to be honest, are read mostly by other law professors.
Right. So this was a different – you were trying to get to the story about the people involved.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting point in here, and I think this is one that got my attention. And there was a statement in an interview you did with Time Magazine just a few days ago that just came out. And in it, the question was – it was very, very interesting the way the reporter asked the question. He said, well, what this really says is that the little guy has no chance of getting to the Supreme Court of the United States. That was the question that was asked to Professor Irons. Your response was, no, no, no. It's because of the advocacy groups, no matter what side, whether it's the ACLU, Americans United, the American Center for Law and Justice. No, the little guy gets to go to the Supreme Court of the United States. Talk about that for a minute.
Right. And this is actually something relatively new, Jay, because a lot of these advocacy groups, of course, the ACLU has been around since 1920. But the others, including your own, really are products of the 80s and the 90s. And without these legal advocacy groups, people in a small community on either side, whether it's a school board member or a parent in a school, wouldn't really have any, wouldn't have the funds, wouldn't have the expertise to take a case that would go all the way up to the Supreme Court. So the advocacy groups are essential to this process.
Now, one of the things you talk about in the book that I found interesting, we'll get into some of the particular cases in a moment, was the personalities behind it. Both the lawyers and the actual plaintiffs and defendants in these cases. What was the most unique aspect of that for you? What do you find most interesting?
Well, the most unique aspect, Jay, is that with the exception of the lawyers, these are just ordinary people. There's nothing unusual or distinguished about them. They're just average people, parents in schools, members of school boards, city council members. And with very few exceptions, they got involved in a conflict in their community over some aspect of religion. None of them had the slightest idea at the time that this case would ever wind up in the Supreme Court. And in many cases, you know, they tried very hard to work out, to resolve these conflicts on a local level. But some cases, many cases, do get resolved, but others wind up going through the legal system all the way.
Was there a common reaction? I've seen this with clients. Was there a common reaction that you saw with the people you interviewed when their case finally did, in those cases that went to the Supreme Court of the United States, the client's reaction, the fact that whichever side they were on, were at the Supreme Court of the United States?
Yeah, and in most of these cases, Jay, they were actually, I would say, awed by the whole process. And some of these people actually, on both sides, went to the Supreme Court to hear the arguments in their cases. And without exception, every one of them said, you know, being in the Supreme Court is just the most awesome experience. You know, anybody out there who hasn't been should visit the Supreme Court. For one thing, as you know, the courtroom is actually quite small and intimate.
Right.
It only seats about 300 people. And it's just invested with history. Now, the court building has only been there since 1935.
Right.
Before that, they had sort of a basement room in the Senate.
Right.
But the current court is just, you know, you get this feeling that this is very, very meaningful.
Did you find, when the people talk about the awe of being there, I have seen with my clients, what I always tell them to do, and all of mine have come to the cases, and they come with their families usually, is, look, this is going to be an intense 60 minutes. You may or may not be able to tell how it's going when you come out. I've had cases where the arguments went very, very difficult, and I carried the day, and I have arguments that went absolutely great, and you lost. I mean, it happens. But they all came out, it's interesting, in unison pretty much, saying, this was an experience I never expected to have. One of my clients called it the majesty of the courtroom, just the experience of watching the nine justices come in and the participation. Let's get to the lawyers a little bit. You focused on a number of us, and there was a couple of interesting factors that you pointed out. One is relationships. Sometimes they can be testy, sometimes not so testy. What were you looking at there when you talked about the backgrounds and how the lawyers engage with each other?
Well, you know, by and large, and there are always some exceptions, but by and large, lawyers belong to a legal fraternity, a community. It's a common culture. And in this country, you know, lawyers get along with each other pretty well. Occasionally, somebody takes a case very, very personally, particularly if they're on the losing side. But the lawyers also vary quite a bit in their own backgrounds. You know, a case you argued from Santa Fe, Texas, the lawyer who was representing the plaintiffs, Anthony Griffin, he'd never argued in the Supreme Court
first
before.
Time.
He had his one-man law office in Galveston, Texas. He volunteered his services through the ACLU. But basically, this was, you know, for him, this was quite an experience as well.
Sure, and you know, it was interesting. His sister was in the courtroom. She was in favor of the position I argued, which was to allow the prayer to go forward. But she came to support her brother, obviously, because, after all, this was the Supreme Court of the United States.
Right. And, in fact, he'd argued an earlier case, not in the Supreme Court, but handled a case. And he's African-American and had been an attorney with the NAACP. He took a case representing members of the Ku Klux Klan. And for him, and they hadn't known beforehand that he was African-American, he said, look, you know, this is what the legal system is about. You know, I represent the principal. And, you know, I think that it points out that lawyers have a higher duty. Of course, you represent your client as zealously as you can, but you have a higher duty to, you know, the legal system. The principles of law and justice are very, very important. And almost every lawyer is quite conscious of that.
You know, one of the things that I've tried to do over the years, and it's going back over 20 years, was when I'm dealing with a lawyer on the other side, even in a very controversial case or what would be a heated case, is I never make the lawyer the enemy. I say anybody's entitled to counsel. A perfect example that I give, this one is not particularly in your book, but you and I have a mutual friend, Michael Newdow. Mike argued a case involving the Pledge of Allegiance. He did a very good job arguing. I thought he was legally wrong. I'm sure you thought he was legally right. And then he got this convoluted decision on standing, which made no sense to anybody that follows the Supreme Court. But I maintained a very good relationship with him. That we're human beings. And one of the things I liked about your book, and one of the reasons I was willing to endorse and put my name on the back of the book, was you got into that side a little bit, that this is not this, you know, not all the lawyers are personally going after each other. There's this commonality that you just don't do that. There's a reason we're an officer of the court. And I thought that was an important part.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember this, Jay, but when I was sitting right behind Dr. Newdow when he argued that case, and I was also sitting in the lawyer section right next to Kenneth Starr,
right,
who was representing on an amicus basis the mother of his
daughter. Yeah, Banning, Sandra Banning.
And at the end of Mike Newdow's argument, Ken Starr comes up to him and says, "Mike, I just want you to know that was a brilliant argument," and shook his hand. And that to me says something. You know, we're not gonna turn these into personal battles.
Right. And that's a great part. All right, let's talk about some of the cases. You covered a lot of cases in here, a lot of cases that people that listen to this broadcast know. One, of course, is the whole issue of the Santa Fe and the football game prayer. We've covered that. What about the Dover Intelligent Design case? There was a lot of controversy on that case, even within the conservative community and the Christian community, about which way that should have gone.
Well, that's a fascinating case. That's the most recent of the cases I wrote about. And I've actually gotten quite involved in that. Since then, I've just written a law review article about that case and the attacks on the judge who made that decision, who, by the way, is a conservative Republican appointed by President Bush.
Right.
But the thing about the and as you point out, and I don't think it's any secret, there were differences within the conservative community over this case. Some felt that it was a bad case from the beginning because the school board members who adopted the, quote, intelligent design policy actually were very firm creationists.
Yeah, and that became a big issue. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to follow up. The book, again, it's available in bookstores everywhere. God on Trial is by my guest, Peter Irons. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
When you choose Regent University, you're choosing to change your life. No one knows the value of an education from Regent more than Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. He received a PhD from Regent, focusing on the legal history of America.
The program, academically, is very rigorous, but at the same time, you get the opportunity to interact with some of the best thinkers in the country that are on the faculty at Regent University. It's really, I think, an unprecedented opportunity for students to really get into a discipline deeply.
Regent's graduate studies are just part of the story. Regent's undergraduate program is quickly expanding with classes offered online and on campus. The environment at Regent is noticeably different than that of other universities.
At Regent, we reinforce the positives of your faith commitment. It's more of an enriching environment in that way, and I think that's one of the major distinctives of this university compared with any other.
Learn more about the college program at Regent by visiting regentundergrad.com, or you can call toll-free 1-800-374-4504. At Regent University, we believe in leadership to change the world. The summer season is a time of celebration, with patriotic events taking place across the country and the U.S. military often invited to take part. But there is one group working to intimidate the armed forces by questioning their involvement in certain celebrations. Americans United for Separation of Church and State tried to pressure the Air Force to cancel patriotic flybys at a Georgia celebration this past Memorial Day simply because Christian groups were involved in the event. And with the 4th of July approaching, it's likely Americans United will try this tactic again. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Sign on today to a letter going to top military leaders, urging them not to be intimidated by pressure tactics of groups like Americans United. Add your name today. Take a stand for freedom. Call now 1-877-877-877-877. 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. Or add your name online at aclj.org.
Broadcast, everyone. We're coming to you from Washington, D.C. In my studio today is a constitutional lawyer friend. Someone's written an interesting, fascinating book. I call it a must-read, God on Trial. It's by Viking Press. It's out in bookstores everywhere. Dispatches from America's Religious Battlefields. And what you're going to find about this book, as we've been talking about this, is kind of getting behind the scenes of what was... It's not going to just be, here was the case, here was the decision. Those are great if you're writing a brief to the Supreme Court of the United States. But if you want to understand what's going on in people's thoughts on both sides of the issue, this is a really good book for that process. I think it'd be very, very helpful. Again, the book is God on Trial. We were talking about the intelligent design case. There was a lot of concern within the communities, and you picked that up in your writings.
Yes, there was quite a conflict within the community. It's a fairly small community, school district in rural Pennsylvania. And the conflict, very interestingly, Jay, was not between what you might call, secular humanists, atheists on one side and Christians on the other side. Virtually all of the plaintiffs in this case, and the defendants as well, the school board members, are Christians. They belong to different denominations. Some are Lutheran, some are Episcopalian, United Church of Christ. Some belong to independent evangelical congregations. So it's not a conflict about Christianity. It's a conflict about what is appropriate to teach in public schools about the issue of creation. And some, of course, members of the school board felt that they should teach literal biblical creationism. And then they adopted this policy called intelligent design. Well, many people think that this is, as Judge Jones said, it's sort of repackaged creationism. But there is still quite a controversy about this. It's not over yet. And I'm sure there will be more cases about this as time goes on.
You know, the interesting thing, the creation cases first started, of course, they were years ago, in the Scopes trial. Then they had the Edwards versus Aguilar, which was the case that allowed the policy of the school was allowing alternative theories of the origin of mankind to be taught. If you taught evolution, you had to teach creation science. The case that has not been litigated yet, and it may not be because I'm not so sure how people engage it's going to be, where you've got a curriculum that has what I would call the more atypical or more typical Bible biology curriculum that has in it, the standard Darwinism, evolutionary right. theory, and then just proposes two or three other theories. Here are other three theories on the origin of mankind, and includes that within the curriculum. That will be the more difficult case for the side that wants to say that the intelligent design should not be caught. But the school districts have not adopted that kind of program
no,
yet.
No, but that's a good point, Jay, because, in fact, the people who put out the textbook that they adopted in Dover, Pennsylvania, called Of Pandas and People, which was, to be quite honest, a creationist book, they have now... through an organization called the Discovery Institute in Seattle, now put out, and it's not even been released yet, although I've seen it, a textbook called Explore Evolution. And in that book, they do not promote intelligent design or creationism. They simply present the arguments for the Darwinian theory of evolution and arguments
against
or critiques against it. And
how do you think that would come out constitutionally?
That would be difficult to say because it's hard to find any overt religion in that book. Now, the critics would say, well, it's just, again, it's another attempt to sneak your foot under the door and get the creationist account in the schools. And others say, well,
I would say academic freedom. They're allowed to, you're allowed to
and of
point
course,
holes at theories.
You know, one thing people tend to forget is that there isn't a single teacher in the country, a biology teacher, who is precluded from talking about critiques of Darwinism.
Right. That's very important that you said that. Right.
Yeah.
Now, let's go to a case where you and I disagreed fundamentally. And that was the famous case we talked about a lot on this radio broadcast. And it was we disagreed, but we disagreed as friends. And that is the it's chapter 4 of your book. Again, the book's title is God on Trials by Peter Irons, available in bookstores everywhere. The Mount Soledad Cross case from San Diego, California. The chapter is With the Cross of Jesus. Now, just to set the framework. Now, you were involved in this case a lot longer than I was. I only got into it. I get into the fun stage when it was heading up to the Supreme Court. But there, the case was the famous cross on Mount Soledad. There was a challenge made to its constitution going back, almost 15 years?
to 1989, 18 years. 18 that years. Case is old enough to vote.
Yeah, that case could vote. So were you surprised? The case moves along, and it looks like at the final stage, the cross is about to come down. What were your thoughts as that was about to come down and then the changes that took place legally?
Well, that's a good question. I was the lawyer on a pro bono basis for the plaintiffs in this case for the first 9 years. Actually, I dropped out of the case, turned it over to another attorney because I was getting threats. And my wife was legitimately concerned about the safety of our, at that time, young children. But it's a case that aroused tremendous passion in San Diego. I lived there for 22 years, and so I experienced it personally. Now, the interesting thing is that the city lost every step. This case went up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit three times. The rulings of the district judge, again, a very conservative Republican judge, that the cross violated the California Constitution, had to be moved or removed. And it seemed just about a year ago that the case was finally over. He issued another order giving the city 30 days to remove the cross or face a $5,000 a year fine. Well, what happened is very interesting. Congressman Duncan Hunter, who's currently a Republican presidential
candidate. Right, we represent.
And Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham, who I don't think you represent.
We do not. Nope, we do not.
Put an amendment in a military appropriations bill. And I say sneaked it in because literally there were no hearings. There was no committee report. It was one of these many amendments that transferred the cross site. Keep in mind, the cross site is just a very small part of a large public park,
right.
720 acres, transferred it to the Defense Department on the ground that it's a national war memorial. Well, what that did, Jay, is it put the case right back in the federal district court all over from scratch,
right,
on the issue of whether it violated this time not the California Constitution but the federal Constitution and the Establishment Clause.
What was your reaction? I've got involved in it right at that stage. I got a call from the mayor and said we need help, and we did provide help. And my suggestion was to take it up on a stay from the Ninth Circuit to Justice Kennedy. Now, the consensus was that Justice Kennedy has not been a big fan of public display of crosses, was going to be a negative vote on that, which would have pretty much ended this. What was I'm not going to let everybody I know what your reaction, because you emailed me immediately, but what was your reaction when Justice Kennedy's initial stay came out and then, of course, the permanent one a few days later?
Well, to be honest, I was surprised. Anish, you're right. I emailed you and I said, well, I don't think Kennedy's going to grant this stay. But he did. And so that almost guarantees that this case is going to come back to the Supreme Court maybe 2 or 3 years from now.
Yep.
After the process goes all through the steps again, the district court, the Ninth Circuit, petition to the Supreme Court. And how the case would come out now is anybody's guess.
Last question is, we've really got a minute left here. You wrote this book to give an inside look. You've gotten good comments coming back from all sides on this. Obviously, you've got people like Nadine Strausen from the ACLU, me from the ACLJ, Barry Lynn of Americans United. Was this what you were hoping to be able to accomplish through this book, that it would be an honest look inside?
Right. That's exactly what I was hoping to accomplish, that by listening to the people, and the book includes very lengthy interviews with people on both sides of all of these cases, that it would let them speak. Not me. I have my own position I presented in the preface, but this book really is to let both sides speak, and so the people who listen to your show or people who listen to Barry Lynn's show can find out what the other side is really like, that they're real people, they're honest people, and in many cases, the only thing that divides them is their notions of separation.
There you go. God on Trial is the book. The author is Peter Irons. He's been our guest today. Dispatches from America's Religious Battlefields. It's available in bookstores everywhere. Of course, Amazon as well. Viking is the publisher. Peter, thanks for being with us.
It's been great, Jay.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we have set up a special legal helpline. If you have specific legal concerns, legal questions, this is the number to call. 1-800-296-4529. It's the legal helpline at the ACLJ, 800-296-4529.